I'm Susan Brown.
I'm Michaela Joy O'Shea.
And I'm Jay Yee.
You're listening to Beyond the Fog Radio,
our podcast about the untold stories of San Francisco's long history from the people that have helped shape it. Whether you're new to San Francisco or have lived here your entire life, join us as we share the stories of our city by the bay. Now, you two, the next episode is really about a neighborhood that is very near and dear to me. Do you know why?
Why, Jay?
Because I grew up there.
Oh, geez.
I spent my childhood riding my gold and black Huffy bike to the library next to APG&E in the Outer Sunset, which is what we're talking about in this episode. And I actually live in the Sunset now. So it's
still near and dear.
Still near and dear because it's
your neighborhood.
I'm in it.
Yeah. Oh, love that.
Yeah, the Outer Sunset, I don't know very much about. I do know the Great Highway and Cliff House and Playland at the Beach and the zoo. But outside of that, I don't really go there that often.
Yeah, well, I mean, what Susan just said is perfect because most people don't know much about the west side of town.
That's true.
Susan just identified three neighborhoods.
She did. And I think part of which was the Richmond, actually. Outer Richmond.
That's
the
right.
Cliff House.
Yeah. Cliff House is in the Outer Richmond.
Yeah. That's okay.
The Great Highway is definitely in the Sunset.
Yeah.
The beach is what is called Parkside, which seems like an extension of the Sunset. And I think the border is Terravel, which is where the L train runs.
There we go.
But
yeah, my experience with the Sunset is also very limited. I almost put a deposit on a place to move there one time. And I always wanted to live in the Sunset. Because, I mean, sadly, you could have a garage in San Francisco and you could park your car.
Also
and
true.
I thought that because I had a traveling job, that would be the easiest. But then I soon learned that the Sunset is just filled with so many magical things that I'm so excited to talk to you guys about today.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, nowadays, the Sunset is the happening place. There's new restaurants that are opening, a brewery, Andy Town Roastery, which is a coffee place. It's all the way out near the beach. It's been taken off. You can find it in different parts of the city now. There's Devil's Tooth Bakery. Yeah.
There's a non-alcoholic bar.
Check that out. I didn't know about that.
Cool. It's all non-alcoholic. Yeah, it's a tiny little gem, but it is so far to get to.
Yes.
But so far away.
You know, especially since the pandemic, it seems like all the neighborhoods people have invested more into.
Yeah.
Which for anyone who's visiting the beach should totally spend some time either grabbing a non-alcoholic drink or coffee or even lunch.
You're not having to venture far.
This episode is a tribute to Anne Collins, who, at the time of our interview, was 100 years old. Born in April of 1923, Anne was raised in San Francisco's Sunset District and raised her own family just a few blocks away from her childhood home. Anne sadly passed away 2 weeks after we recorded her in August of 2023. So this interview is very dear to us. The following interview is broken up into sections to make it easier to follow. Anne's children, Jen and Greg, conducted the interview in the same house where they grew up, while we were in attendance as flies on the wall. Here is our interview with the beautiful human being, Anne Collins.
My name is Anne Collins. I'm a school teacher.
When is your birthday?
April 30th.
So she's 100 years old.
It's my mother's birthday, too.
They had the same birthday, but her mom's birth certificate burned in the 1906 fire.
Oh, wow.
She knew her birthday, but she didn't know the year.
I'm Gregory Collins, and in this house, I'm known as Jeep. I was a school teacher. I'm retired since 2017. I ended my teaching at Lowell, and I spent most of my teaching at Newcomer High School, which no longer exists, but I was a bilingual teacher. Before that, I did many other things.
He's a fantastic artist.
Oh, yes. Fantastic.
And speaking of teaching, I do participate in education. My wife has an art school. She does thousands of hours of more painting than I do. And she also teaches up there at 31st and Taravelle, where my mom grew up.
Awesome.
And that bakery that used to be a speakeasy or a blind pig where the local policeman would get his whiskey is now an art school.
We really come full circle.
Yeah, come full circle. My mother was thrilled to know that we were back to that building there.
And I'm Jennifer Collins Greenlee. I'm an international yoga teacher. And for 23 years, I was a librarian, many of those at San Francisco Public Library.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for having us in your home. It's really nice to meet you.
They want to meet you because you're 100 and you know about the Sunset District.
I know about the Sunset, although I was born in the Market.
Sanchez Street. Weren't you born at 26th Street in Sanchez?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't remember, though. I was born when my parents lived on 31st Avenue.
Oh, just the block over.
A lot of new babies were on that street in 1923.
Wow.
There were a lot of babies.
And what was this neighborhood like?
Very nice. It was fun. Everybody was welcome. We thought it was great to have more kids. And we played on the street, not on the sidewalk. We played on the street. And later on, we had somebody in guard over each corner saying, "Cars coming."
Oh, yeah.
How many kids were on the block?
How many kids were on your block? Around 40 or 50?
One block.
One block. They were building these houses, and I guess as soon as they were finished, a family moved in because they wanted to be down the Taravelle. We were like 8, 9 years old, and we were watching everything that happened. Who was moving into that new house and all the history of the people who are moving here? Did you play in the construction areas of the houses? Were there empty lots? Oh, empty lots were wonderful. Yeah.
They were fun?
Yeah.
Why were the empty lots wonderful?
Because you could run into them, and a whole bunch of kids were always waiting for some place where nobody lives, and you get there and have a little fight or a little whatever.
A fight.
It was a full of kids. We always had to know who they were and how long they were here.
Do you remember you played on roller skates a lot?
Oh, God, we lived on roller skates.
You had the key? Was,
the key, oh, the key, too, for the skates, yeah. And somebody, who has a skate key? Who has a skate key? So we can get the skates loose.
Yeah.
And maybe put them on our shoes.
Yeah, you could you could exchange them. You could trade out. And you were pretty good at the hockey with the roller skates, right?
Oh, yeah, I was good on roller skates.
Yeah. You know, 1 foot off the gutter, G?
I remember 1 foot off the gutter.
Yeah.
And hide and seek. And we played baseball. Did they play baseball on 31st? Did they play baseball with a hard ball or a tennis ball?
Oh, a tennis ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they might play, if they wanted to, some big strong man or strong boy would say, "I'm playing with the baseball." And that's
best thing. Yeah. Yeah.
On the street.
Yeah.
And we have guards on the street.
Yeah.
We appoint people and say, "Don't come down here, we're playing."
Yeah.
So what else did they play?
Besides baseball, you mean?
Yes.
1 foot off the gutter.
1 foot off the gutter,
what
right.
What is that?
1 foot off the gutter was before skating, but it was all the kids were involved and everybody on the street.
You know the rules of that?
I no, don't, because we did hide and seek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1 foot off the gutter was...
I think that you had to tag somebody with the ball, and if they had their foot on the gutter, you
if
were safe.
If they were on the foot of the gutter, they were safe.
Yeah.
And the one team was safe.
Yep, that was the kind of...
So it was a team sport.
Kind of deal.
It was all related to baseball, I think, in a way.
All ball games.
Mm-hmm. Next, Anne talked about her family life. And for context, because she's hard of hearing, if it sounds like she's asking herself, it's because she's actually reading from a set of questions that we printed out for her beforehand.
What did your mom do on a typical day? Well, my mother did her housework and everything because she had more kids than anybody on the street.
How many kids did she have?
She had eight.
Eight.
Wow. And
we lived on this side of the street. She told us not to cross the street, so we didn't. But we would sit by the empty lot. It was an empty lot, and we would sit on there and watch the people. They were playing baseball. They usually played baseball.
And did she do housework and watch you?
Yeah, it was on this. She opened the garage door.
I see.
And then our garage door is like, here is all the free toys you ever want. Because my aunt used to buy us. My mother had eight kids, and nobody had eight kids in those days.
Your aunt would shop because she had a city job. She could buy you more toys because she didn't have any kids. Yeah.
You know, you were in levels, I guess. In the neighborhood, you had more money to spend, I guess.
If you had fewer kids.
Yeah. Where did you go shopping? Oh, let's see. We could go shopping in West Portal if we lived along here. I lived up there 31st. My mother actually bought some clothes in West Portal. She said, oh, those aren't very good clothes.
Did your aunt take you to West Portal or did she take you downtown?
My aunt would take us to West Portal, but the next thing could take us downtown.
Mm.
She liked more choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
The Emporium? Was that there?
Emporium was still, Emporium was the biggest place. And if you could get the Emporium, you could get anything. And any price, low to high.
Yeah.
And it was the story.
Where was it located? Was it on Market Street? Or?
It's on Market Street, in the middle of Market, and it had everything you wanted.
It was near where the Westfield area. Yeah,
that was the former Emporium.
Market and Powell.
Mm-hmm. And then you could take, after you bought your stuff on Powell and Market, you could take a streetcar to Fisherman's Wharf, and you could get on the small little cars.
Oh, so it was a smaller streetcar, and you could go along the wharf.
Yeah, it could take you to the wharf.
You'd get fresh fish.
Yeah, and then we could get off it because the wharf had all kinds of different stores.
Mm.
Oh, it was interesting.
Was it? I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, and then it gradually just left the front.
Yeah.
Let you to shop on the Market Street or someplace.
Right. Oh, did you know that?
They had a few things on Market, yeah.
What did your father do for work?
Oh, he was Van Ness Avenue.
Yeah.
He worked for a social club and was a Catholic social club. It was in this beautiful building on Van Ness and Market. They had big meetings and they had picnics and we'd all go down to the picnic on Sunday.
What was the name of that place?
Oh, YMI, the Y Young Men's Organization.
Institute.
At the time here, we thought Anne was talking about the YMCA, but she's actually referring to the Young Men's Institute, or YMI, which is a Catholic fraternal organization in San Francisco that dates back to 1883. This conversation pivoted then to Anne's love of dancing.
They all come to Van Ness and Market, and they go to some big park, some kind of fun park. They have music and dancing. My dad would go to there because he worked for a social agency. And he'd take us to where the social agency started. And we'd look at everything and what we were supposed to do and what we were supposed to say. And it wasn't a terribly big place, but we liked to see the dancing. They had big dance floors. They loved the dancing.
Yeah.
And I did too.
You love dancing.
I loved the dancing.
You took tap lessons, right?
I took tap, yeah.
When did you take it on, after school or?
Yeah, it was after school. And then on the weekends, they'd get together, maybe you couldn't have a picnic.
Okay. But in school dances or at Russian River, you would dance swing dance, right?
Oh, if for the summer. See, Russian River was about 2 hours away or an hour and a half away. But we mostly all San Francisco people were there for their summer.
And they had a live band.
Oh, they had two live bands.
Okay.
The floor was beautiful. They would open at 9 o'clock in the evening, and they close at 11 or so, 10:30 or 11. And it was for young people dancing.
And you loved it.
And I loved it. And then we met the people. They're all from San Francisco, mostly all from San Francisco. So when the summer was over, like 2 months were over, they got our names, and then they'd phone us when we go home. Russian River was closed, and the phone would ring, and they, can you go to our junior prom? You know, can you go to our sophomore hop? And, oh, yes. And
networking.
Yeah, you know, that was fun.
So you're talking about the boys would call you.
And the afterwards. Boys I know were,
yeah.
They were claiming to get their trail of women. You know?
Trail of girls.
What kind of cars did you ever have? My mother had 8 children. She had 7-passenger, they call them, 7-passenger cars. Mostly my mother had a baby, so she didn't go. Dad would get, I think it must have been a good price, because it was 7-passenger cars. Every 2 months or so, he'd have a new car. And it was...
Wow.
You know,
you get a new, a used car, though, right?
What, a used they were, car.
Yeah, they were not,
but it was very nice.
He had a lot of friends.
Yeah.
He had a lot of friends. Were they selling cars on Van Ness at that time?
Yes, they were. They were selling he worked cars on Van Ness. Yeah.
That's and why he got so many cars.
That's why he got
a lot
friends.
Of new cars. Yeah.
You told me once you guys had an old limousine.
We had an old limousine because not too many people want a car that has 8 kids. And so we always had these nice, new, almost new cars. And my father worked on Van Ness Avenue. And he would say, oh, here. They knew that he would buy it cheap.
And you had the flip seats kind
I had the flip seat. Yeah.
On the limo.
Uh-huh.
But you told me that the car broke down on the way to Yosemite.
Well, the Yosemite wall was breaking down.
Oh, yeah. They were trying to go to Yosemite.
And my father... was not good at fixing cars.
No. He wasn't a mechanic.
No, he wasn't a mechanic. But he'd hop out of the car and think he was a mechanic. And he'd open up the
hood.
Up the tree. And he never fixed it.
Was he? He was in World War One, right?
World War One. My wow. dad was in World War One, and he loved it. He loved it. Always wanted to be in the Army. But he never made it. I mean, he got right out because my mother was waiting for him. She had a ring to get married, and he had to get married.
He would have liked to spend more time in the military.
Yeah.
But
he wanted to spend, yeah.
How did he stay out of the trenches?
You told us that they liked his handwriting.
Oh, yes.
And so he got a special clerical mission instead of being in the trenches. So that's why we're here today. It's because he had nice handwriting.
Handwriting was a big deal.
If he had gone to the trenches,
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
My dad had beautiful handwriting. It was like an art. Whatever he wrote looked like art. He had big capital letters. And he took a very long time to write what he was going to write. And everybody complimented him on his writing.
And then I think the military liked his handwriting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he was...
Because people could read it, and it looked nice.
Mm-hmm. He had to finish reparations with the Germans. So he went around kind of handling the books and things
My
like that.
My father did.
Mm-hmm.
He was with the quartermaster.
I know he liked Germans.
Yeah.
He liked the Germans.
Yeah, and he felt it was interesting. He said after the war, he was in a church with Germans and French people in a Catholic church, and he looked around and said, these are our enemies? And so he felt why, you know, just so.
I think my father enjoyed the war.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He wrote a bunch of letters, and we have them in a book.
Wow.
To my grandmother, which she burned hers, I think she was too, thinking they were private. So he kept his, though, and they were very detailed about the joy that he felt on Armistice Day, and that it was like, you know, war would never happen again. It's a really interesting letter.
Yeah.
As enlightening as the story was, we steer the conversation back to the sunset. For the longest time, the Sunset was an undeveloped expanse of windswept sand dunes. Many people thought the area would be uninhabitable, but things started to change in the 20s and the 30s.
Did you play in the sand dunes? Did you pick up old pig puppies? Every house was almost a single house in a wild lot. All the kids played in the wild lots, and they picked, you know, all the flowers. And
you love poppies.
We love poppies.
Yeah.
And they were so pretty, orange, yellow orange. And there were a lot of kids, a lot of kids. Was polio a concern for your family? Yes, but my mother was a kind of a, my mother had eight kids. And so she never would let us be too afraid of a disease. Because you'd be outside playing with kids, you don't know. It's like I can't play outside because my mother says that you'll get the disease. But my mother says, well, you get the disease anywhere.
Some people didn't go to swimming pools.
Yeah, people say, oh, don't go to swimming pools, you get polio. My mother said, well, that's great. Then we'll be the only ones there.
So you had a whole pool to yourself.
Sure, Fly Shacker.
And Fly Shacker, I didn't know it was a saltwater pool, you told me.
Fly Shacker Pool was named after Herbert Fly Shacker, the then president of the San Francisco Parks Commission. The pool closed in 1972, and in 1999, it was filled and paved over to become a parking lot for one of Fly Shacker's other notable projects, the San Francisco Zoo.
That's what we didn't particularly care for. But we found out that downtown you get a streetcar, and you got to play in these nice pools, the pools that were open for all the city. Then we go swimming down there, indoor swimming. And someone said, I don't like indoor. I don't care what it is. I love swimming.
Did you go swimming on the peninsula or?
Go swimming in the building.
On the inside building. Okay.
And Mom, you told me today, what color was Fly Shacker Pool?
Green.
I was shocked. I was like, it was green?
Yeah, it was green. I learned to swim there. So
where is Fly Shacker Pool?
Fly Shacker Pool is now the parking lot of the zoo.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I learned to swim there 2 feet on one end and 14 feet deep on the other.
Was that much? It was huge.
And then there were diving towers.
Oh, yeah, they had a big diving, and they flipped over before they go in.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people showing off there.
And it was a city-run.
It was 1,000 feet long. When I was a kid, you would send me there all by myself so I could walk. Yeah. I could walk
They had a guard.
They had guards, yeah. Yeah, but the streets were safe enough that, well, you thought that I could walk. We could all walk around. We lived on 46th Avenue, remember that? Mm-hmm. And then I could walk to the zoo by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At what age?
Seven.
I don't know
eight.
If I told you, but don't walk away with anybody.
Yeah, right. You gave me good advice.
Don't talk to strangers.
But that pool, there was a legend. Everything has a legend. There was always a legend about dead bodies being found in the pool.
Oh.
Because the water was green and it wasn't clear. It was salt water. And there was,
water.
And they always said, you know, they found a body under the ladder.
Anne grew up during the Prohibition years, and we asked her what she remembered about that particular time. As it turns out, in the Sunset, there was a bakery that also sold alcohol on the down low.
Mom, you know the place where Lynn has her art school? That building on 31st Avenue in Taravelle. It was a bakery, but you told me you saw something. You remember you saw a policeman outside the bakery.
Because the policeman always wanted samples. When they went into the store, they got a free drink.
When you say drinks, you mean alcohol, right?
Alcohol, yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's supposed to sell alcohol at that time.
Right.
You told me that the parents in all these houses here would have private parties.
Oh, yes. Oh, good.
And then that was...
They say, Well, my garage door is going to be open. And so they could tell the fathers on the street that with the garage doors open to go in the backyard, they're serving liquor.
It was probably homemade liquor, you think?
Probably, yeah, homemade liquor in the backyard.
And then I think like down by the beach, there were speakeasies and things like that.
Oh, yes. Some of the stores were open where they sell a drink. Well, nobody else could sell a drink, mm-hmm. but you could go by the beach and get it. I guess you could pay for it. I don't know.
It's hard to picture the city of San Francisco without the iconic Golden Gate Bridge. But Anne lived through a period of time when it didn't exist. She was 14 years old when she attended the bridge's opening day on May 27, 1937.
These folks would love to know about the Golden Gate Bridge Day opening.
Oh, yes, we were all there.
You were about 14 years old.
Yeah, about 14. I was about in the seventh or eighth grade.
Did they let you out of school?
We had school out. It was a holiday.
Oh, okay. You got to walk across, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And did you dress up?
Yes, we did. And I remember the newspaper told about me and my friend going to cross the bridge, walk across.
How were you dressed?
Oh, you were dressed as a Mexican.
What did you have on your head?
I think it was a mantilla.
Mantilla, yeah.
So she... When I read about it, I think it said it was a fiesta.
It was a fiesta.
They wanted that theme for the day.
Uh-huh.
And that, I didn't realize that because she always told me she was in the Mexican outfit. But then it turns out I think it was some kind of intentional thing for the whole community. Yeah.
What did Grandpa do on that day?
Probably went to work.
What about the horses? Did he bring horses to the bridge?
Oh, my grandfather.
Your grandfather.
Oh, not my father. Oh, he brought horses. My grandfather worked for the Bank of America.
Wells Fargo.
In Wells Fargo.
Oh, was it? Pardon me. So he worked for the, and he had a truck, an open truck. And I think I sat in there for a while when we were in the city.
Right.
Because it was a big day and everybody waved and everything.
Did he bring the horses that day?
He might have.
He was in charge of the saddle making and all of the
harness shop.
Because he was there in the 1800s, so it's like they had horses.
He was making the saddles for Wells Fargo.
Uh-huh.
Wells Fargo was delivering their money in horses. Horses.
And horses.
Oh my God, that's so
amazing.
That's
her grandfather.
That's wild.
I thought you told me once that he drove horses when they opened the bridge.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
That he had a wagon.
He probably did. Yeah, well, there was so much excitement at that time when the bridges, two bridges opened.
Yeah.
There was a parade and everybody was so excited about all these new places opening.
Yeah.
Before the bridge, there was no bridge. It was just nothing.
It was a great ferry ride.
Oh.
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah.
You could see the whole thing.
Yeah, you could see the whole center, and all the openings. If you were on the lower boat of the ferry boat, we could look out right on the water. Then you go upstairs, and you could hang out on the rail, see the city and see the bay.
Did you drive your cars onto the ferry, or was it walking only?
You drove on the ferry.
Okay.
And you got out and you went upstairs.
Oh, how nice.
And you could buy candy or something somewhere on the boat going across from San Francisco.
To Sausalito, maybe. Huh? Was it Sausalito or something?
Yeah, we could get off and obviously wander around for the next boat when we come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How fun. I wanted you to say about...
Did you like to watch the sunset?
The actual sunset?
Oh, out here, yes. And we had a house that was on 31st Avenue, and it was just on a rise. So every afternoon we'd lunch before dinner and see all around the beach.
You could see the ocean.
Yeah, you could see the ocean.
And the sunset. You used to read books to your brothers or something and put them to bed?
The last room in our house was just right on top of the hill there. And I had the business of getting my younger brothers ready for bed. So I had a big window and we'd stand there and I'd get their pajamas on. And then I'd read them, I'd promise to read them a story if they were good. So they were, and I'd read them a story, and I'd get them to bed. Because my mother had 8 kids, and so there was a job there, and I did it. I got them to bed.
She was the second kid of 8, and the oldest girl. There were 6 boys and 2 girls.
Tell me about the gliders.
The gliders in the sand dunes. Oh, yes. The sand dunes was up and down and up and down. So you get the highest point. They'd sit on a chair like or something. It was hooked up. And the guys would get in the chair and we'd watch them.
The gliders glide. Would take off.
They'd glide.
So would they go down the hill and then take
off?
Yeah,
they'd go down the hill. There was so much to do out here because it was not populated, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of new people, young people come out here. Oh, we can do this, we can do that. And they did that. And they had the streetcar and they had the buses. So it was fun to see things growing.
Yeah.
Once when the glider went down to the bottom, how did they get back up?
They had some silly guy. Would you say, we'll give you 50 cents if you pull the boat up? There was a lot to do with nothing.
This is true. It was pretty empty.
And there were a lot of teenagers around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot of young people. And some people had more kids. So a lot of street life with young people.
Oh, yeah. And now Al Dolores' husband, my sister's husband, came out here. You know, a truck or something. He was always, and they give him some money. You know, will you carry this for us? And will you do this? And
like odd jobs.
Before there was anything social, I mean, anything permanent.
Yeah.
Al was out here.
Wow.
And they'd give him a couple dollars if he'd pull a horse or something.
God, it's amazing.
But it was a lot of stuff going on. The Great Highway, there was restaurants. Then it became accustomed to go out and get some nice little dinner.
The Great Highway runs for 3.5 miles along the water's edge next to Ocean Beach. Anne was 6 years old when the Great Highway opened to traffic in 1929.
Can we actually ask Greg a question? Since you're the oldest.
Yeah.
What it was like growing up here with mom and your family when you were young?
My memory begins on 46th Avenue in Noriega. So I guess that would be 1947. What year did we move to 46th Avenue, Mom?
It was after the war.
After the war. So it was 47, yeah. And I remember that was very near the beach. So we'd go to the beach a lot. It's funny because I asked my mother, what's out there on the other side of the ocean? And you said China.
Right? And I always used to look for China. I go to the beach and we'll look for China way down there.
And then keep digging
in the sand.
China, But then I remember that street. I remember mules and donkeys. And I remember icemen. And I remember the garbage men were pretty scary because they wore leather. And they had big sacks, and they did some very backbreaking work. There was nothing ergonomic or scientific about what the garbage men did. They did a lot of work, and I also remember houses being moved, entire houses.
Wow.
Moving up and down the street. That's something you don't see
by a horse. Much.
Sometimes by horse. Once in a while, you could see. That would take a team of horses to do that. Uh-huh. But yeah, we saw houses being moved, and it seemed impossible what was happening. It was surreal to see that. But I had a friend named Alan, my first friend, and there was a girl on the street, Barbara Bean. She was my girlfriend. I don't know if she was aware that she was my girlfriend, but she was my girlfriend. And at that time, I went to Holy Name School, which was on 36th, I think.
Is it Lawton?
36 and Lawton. And I walked from 46 and Noriega to 36 and Lawton. It was pretty quiet. There was always the sound of the beach, the surf. And remember Playland at the beach.
Playland at the Beach, also known as Whitney's Playland, was an amusement park located next to Ocean Beach and the Great Highway. Sadly, it closed in 1972.
Dave Black?
Whitney's Playland at the Beach.
Oh, it went way beyond the war, I think.
Yeah, into the 1950s and 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? My mother would say, don't talk to anyone out there.
Yeah. Do you remember about Sutro?
Huh?
The Sutro baths.
Oh, Sutro baths. Yeah, my mother knew against that too. She didn't go to Sutro baths.
Why was that?
Because my father had charge of a big building downtown of Van Ness and Market. My mother said, you can go to your dad's place. Don't go to this place.
Well, did it feel unsafe or
feeling unsafe, maybe kind of people looking for somebody to...
It was a pretty busy place.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I remember it burned in 66 because a friend of mine did a beautiful painting. We were together at City College, and he did a beautiful painting for the design class. And about 2 months later, it burned down. It had an unsavory feeling there. I remember Susie and Terry went for ice skating. So they had ice skating and they had swimming. It was multi-level. There was lots of iron. I just remember, and there was the smell of chlorine. It didn't feel safe.
Huh.
There were strange men sometimes there. And I think the only reason I was there was to accompany my sisters to take their ice skating or their swimming lessons.
Jeep, I read about that, about it's not safe for kids to go out there.
Yeah.
Because there were... all these kind of halfway people, or they're hiding in a little closet or something. You know, wasn't the place to be.
Even when I grew up, I didn't get the feeling that it was really safe.
Yeah, that it was really safe. Yeah. But I do remember that when I did my swimming lessons, the recreation department, they had free swimming lessons. And I was 7 years old, and by that time we were on 44th Avenue, and I could walk there and take my lessons. I remember the particular way of rolling up the towel. I love that ritual of rolling up your towel. I don't know. I thought it was so cool. And it was wicked cold.
Yeah.
Flyshucker pool was viciously cold.
Wow. Hmm.
But you just get in. When they say jump, you jumped. What was good about salt water is it's easy to float in. So you can float really well. And you know.
Did you have the same street life that Mom had?
Yeah, we played football on the street. We played baseball with tennis ball. We didn't really play. We just threw pitches.
Mm.
And it was pitcher batter with the tennis ball. And we there was a poor house on the poor family on the 44th and Yoloa that had a garage door that was used as the backstop for the pitching. And every once in a while with the football, we would knock out a wire or two, you know. That was the main event. The main event was football. Unfortunately, we didn't do much basketball. Basketball would have been really great to play on the street, but we didn't do a lot of that. There was a lot of traffic between on 44th and Yoloa, a lot of traffic to and from the zoo area.
Mm. Do you remember when the zoo was built?
Gosh, I don't know. Do you remember when the zoo was built, Mom? Flyshacker Zoo.
Yes, the 20s.
The 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember people going on that.
And we were warned, my mother, don't talk to any people down there.
Yeah.
Everything near the beach sounds like it had a little cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Cautionary tales.
We ate a lot of peanuts going to the zoo, and then we'd throw them at the animals. And peanuts and popcorn, but mostly peanuts, you know.
I remember people at the zoo or something on the streetcar, people would have little baby chicks. Yeah. I feel like, would they take them from the zoo? I just remember strange streetcar.
People were doing all kinds of things to make money.
Yeah, maybe they were selling them on the
selling,
street.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Selling chicks.
It was much more of a kind of...
Freelance
area.
Yeah, laissez-faire.
It felt more freelance in those days. Oh, yes. Susan has the last question. What is it about San Francisco that made you stay here for 100 years?
Oh, where was the water and where was the beautiful mountains and then there was the people. They were all friendly. Nobody was snooty or anything and everybody wanted to join in on things.
So you like in San Francisco, you stay here.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you move to the suburbs?
Because we had a house already.
Okay. Got it.
Well, it's the today's story, too.
Isn't yeah, today's is.
So it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
You know?
So you like the sense of the community of San
community,
Francisco.
Community, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You like that people are friendly.
Oh, yeah. And they all want to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was and then the streetcar was wonderful. The L streetcar. You get on and you go through the tunnel and you're downtown where all the businesses are, where all the clothes are, the nice clothes, mm-hmm. where all the nice things are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did for all my life until I was in college.
Right. You liked the sense of you could take public transportation.
You could see different people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What I miss about the old sunset, getting wind burned, sand burns. The wind would blow the sand, blow it in your face, but pretty incessantly.
But you kind of liked it.
I kind of like now I think back on it. It's like my nickname. I used to be very embarrassed by my nickname, which is Jeep. That was a pain to have to hide. But the sand burn is also another thing.
Now here we asked Greg to tell us about the neighborhoods.
I do remember being bullied because I wasn't tough. At any point, if I strayed from my neighborhood, I could find myself confronted with two, three guys. And for no reason, they'd just pummel me. It wasn't often, but it was a lesson. You know, this is not your area. What are you doing here? And it's just a kind of something primal about males roping off an area. Even in the mind, an area to say, this is mine, that's yours, you go back. There were invisible borders that I even feel today. I go to 44th and Yoloa in my car, go by there, and I get up to 43rd and I feel
different.
A twinge. I feel different. Yeah. Then this is not my street.
Yeah.
That 44th, my landlord for my wife's school, we have a landlord who grew up with me on 44th and Yoloa. He still lives in a house down there, and I go there, and it's my territory, even though nobody knows me there. I look down 43rd, and I look around as if something, who's there?
The memories are still there.
Yeah, yeah. The trauma is still there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very block-centric. One block, and then straight to the other was quite a different territory.
And then there was the mystic feeling. My mother would get me up at 5:30 in the morning. When I got to be 13, I was going to go into St. Ignatius High School, and somebody would have to pay for that. It couldn't come from Dad, so my mother said to get a paper out. Remember, I delivered the Chronicle.
She got you up to get the papers
out. Yeah, she got me up at 5:30 in the morning. And sometimes she'd give me a potato to keep me warm.
A baked potato. You can hold it, you'll stay warm for about half hour or some more than that.
What an idea. Then you can eat it.
Yeah.
What, you didn't want to deliver the Examiner, was in the afternoon. You
know? No. So in the morning, but I always remember a meteorite came at 5:30 in the morning. It went from west to east. They say you can't hear them. But they also say that people who do see them also hear it.
Wow.
But I always remember that feeling of delivering the paper at 6 in the morning. My paper route took me out to the zoo. So the lions were roaring. So I always remember that one meteor And every day being afraid the lions or the tigers are going to get out.
Yeah.
And then trying to assure myself, oh, they won't. They won't. Everything's okay. They could have.
They could have. They could have.
We'd always hear the lions roar.
Yeah, we could always hear the lions roar.
So it was the ocean. We always hear the ocean.
And the
we
zoo.
Always hear the zoo, the lions and the gibbons.
Yeah, the gibbons too. Yeah,
the gibbons
and the peacocks.
And the peacocks, yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap up for mom's sake because you've told so many stories.
Here's a wrap-up question. If somebody was visiting San Francisco, what would you tell them to do? What was one of your favorite things to do here, growing up here?
Well, I think the zoo was one. And then you could just go up.
Here, I'll put your
favorite. Go through the tunnel.
And then,
but I'd start out, here, this is the end of the line. Take the streetcar all the way through the park side, the west portal, and go through.
And then what's your favorite place?
There's so many places, but I'd like downtown, like St. Francis Hotel.
I wanted you to mention the Mark Hopkins. What did you do with the Mark Hopkins?
What did I do with the Mark? Dance with a wonderful orchestra. The best orchestras were at the Mark and the Fairmont. And that's where I did a lot of dancing.
Where did you hang out there? Did you hang out at the top or the bottom?
We always went to the top and the bottom.
Okay, but so you went to the lobby of the Mark Hopkins.
The lobby of the Mark Hopkins is up on top, isn't
okay.
it?
Okay, yeah, that's the top
went
of the Mark.
That and the one on where the city
St. Francis.
Is. St. Francis.
Yeah.
They always had top orchestras. And it didn't cost anything too much to get in.
Yeah.
They wanted people dancing.
Jeep, do you have a favorite place that you would send people to?
Walk the beach.
Mm.
Yeah, just walk the beach. That's,
yeah.
That's my number one.
Land's End, Cliff House.
Yeah.
Yeah, area.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you for having us. This has been a treat, really. You know, walking out of this interview, which is really a conversation between a mother and two of her kids, I'm just so happy that we were able to capture that time and that we were able to witness that.
I know. It was incredibly special.
It was so sweet. And we're all here like with glassy eyes because it just, there's so many feelings when you're in a room with someone who has lived through so many things. I mean, all the things we talked about are major events in our city, and she lived through them.
I know.
And right?
It was just incredible. And I think after all that, the sweetest thing that I remember from that interview was we put the headphones on her and we cranked the volume and she could hear us talk to her. And it was like she hadn't heard in 20 years.
I know. That was amazing.
Wasn't that so
that
cool?
That was so great.
I almost cried.
I did too.
Because it was the first, it's not like the first, but she's been needing someone to pretty much yell in her ear to understand the people in her life talking to her.
Right. Or write it down.
Or write it down.
As we did a little bit.
As we did. Exactly. And she got to speak to her kids and her kids got to hear her. And it was just magic.
It was so sweet.
We were very, very lucky. She lived a really long time. 100 is a long time.
Oh, so lucky.
It just kind of brings it all home, right? Life is so precious. And how wonderful do we feel to give that gift to their family?
And how wonderful it is that they gave us a gift and allowed us to speak to her 2 weeks before she passed.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I didn't care what we had to talk about.
No.
The fact that we were there was just profound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an honor.
It's always an honor to talk to everybody who we talk to. Who are we talking to on our next episode, Jay?
Well, Michaela, next episode, we talk to Wendy Hsu, who is born and raised in Chinatown and has this wonderful nonprofit called Be Building Education that is doing some amazing work in Nepal.
To hear this episode and all of our episodes, past and future, download Beyond the Fog Radio from Google, Spotify, or Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
And then make sure that you are following us on all of our social channels. We've really ramped it up, everybody. There's so much content for you to feast your eyes upon. We're at Beyond the Fog Radio.
That's right. And this concludes this episode of Beyond the Fog Radio. As always, thank you for listening. And until next time, take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Beyond the Fog Radio would not exist without the help from Tim O'Shea, Tim Johnson, Arliss Hayes, and Connor Chang.
And we want to thank our partners, San Francisco Magazine and the Park James Hotel. We also want to thank our amazing sponsors, Bill O'Keefe, Michael Baines, and Brenda Wright. Beyond the Fog Radio, all rights reserved, 2023.